Welcome to El Talajón's La Liga Weekly. The merry-go-round is turning very quickly in Manuel Pellegrini's case, or so we read. To be fair, he's done his bit by Betis. Who could complain now if he toddled off to China? Maybe they should retire his shirt thinking about it. Unai Emery is back in Spain as Villarreal's new coach, not looking a day older than when he joined Arsenal, suspiciously. And Villarreal made up for that PR gap by sharing a picture actually taken this week with Unai hard at work writing with his pen lid still on. Let's hope that's not a metaphor for what's about to unfold. Given the number of coaches Watford and Valencia go through, there is a mathematical inevitability about them ending up with the same guys from time to time. Javi Gracia is back. There is no job that he won't take. The transfer news is beginning to bubble. Ferran Torres off to Manchester City. Alvaro Negredo back in La Liga. And Dimitri Fouquier has moved between Watford and Granada. Eh? What? I thought we'd done that one last... Anyway, yes, I've lost track of which way Dimitri Fouquier is moving between those two clubs. Anyway, Kennedy has left Getafe and gone back to his parent club, which is, Chelsea, probably, usually a safe bet. The transfer madness, we will get to that. An independent study has claimed that the best-run club in Europe in terms of its financial management is, wait for it, Leganés. And the prize, having all your strikers stolen and relegation. Yes, there's obviously more serious and concerning news around. We'll get to that as well, the mess of the situation in the Segunda playoffs at Fuenlabrada. And all of that, we will get to that. First question for Terry from Rehealed is, what do you take in your tea, Terry? That's it sounds like an offer. I don't think it is.
milk, no sugar, and a couple of those shortbread biscuits that with the fruit in. They're the winner.
Yeah. Right, there we are, everybody. So there we are. If you want to deliver those to Terry Gibson's house, his Essex mansion, they will get to him. Where do we start then, Terry? There's a lot of stuff. Should we start with the managerial situation? We've got quite a few questions about Valencia. Lucas says, is Javi Gracia a good fit for Valencia? What about the rumoured sales of key players? If Matthew will Javi Gracia try to bring Femini and De La Feu back to Spain? UEFA Intertoto Cup, who doesn't miss that? Should Valencia have gone for Mono Burgos as their manager? Would have made them the closest thing that Valencia could have got to Diego Simeone. So Javi Gracia, he fits a profile, doesn't he? At a club that is in a bit of a mess, he will take it on. And, you know, with his own, you know, sort of stoical, hard-working sense, he tries to make the best of situations.
Yeah, I don't think it's a wise choice in the circumstances. I think he achieved good work with Malaga and to a degree at Watford as well, which we know isn't an easy job. So I'm surprised when his name was linked, purely because you quickly forget about managers that are out of work. But I can see the merits of Valencia putting him in charge as a coach, because that's what he predominantly will be. He won't be responsible for picking and choosing who they buy and sell. So, that you know, you have to have a certain type of manager whose strengths are on the coaching pitch. And I think he's a more than decent coach. Can he get the best out of players? Can he organise them into a cohesive unit? Definitely. So, no, I think it's quite a wise choice from Valencia. And he knows the circumstances that he's going to be working under. So it won't come as a surprise to him. He's not going to go in power crazy and start messing around and arguing with the people upstairs above him. He'll just concentrate purely on you know, coaching the players and managing the first team. So yeah, I think it's quite a sensible choice, to be honest.
Is that a model that you think is working at the moment? A couple of years ago, it sort of was threatening to become very fashionable, wasn't it? And we sort of defined it as the difference between how we do it in England and how it was done elsewhere, that the guy in charge, the guy standing on the touchline, isn't all-powerful as they used to be in England. Valencia finished mid-table. Watford got relegated. Does it make sense doing it that way, or should you have a? Does it make more sense for the guy on the touchline who picks the team to have more of a say in the running of the club?
Oh, I think there has to be a partnership. I really do. I think what we've seen from Valencia and probably Watford, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I would imagine there's a lot of change in terms of personnel in the background. At Valencia, they've probably gone through four technical directors in the last couple of years, so that needs to be resolved. And I think the technical director has to work alongside the coach. The coach has to explain in great detail what he needs in terms of the players that he wants, what type of players he wants, what positions he wants to strengthen. And then there has to be a partnership that the technical director goes away, comes back with a list of names, that are possible, that fit the profile of what the coach is looking for. And then ultimately, the coach has to have the final say, because what you will get invariably is a coach that doesn't play the players that have been bought for him, which is a complete waste of energy and time and money for any club that works in those circumstances. So I don't think there's too many managers that are forced into picking players. So therefore, you have to have, you know, players available for the manager that he wants to play. You know, there's no point in buying him half a dozen players he doesn't want to play, and he won't play. And no matter what happens, you can't force him to play. And then, because ultimately we know what happens, it ends up in a big split, big argument, a big drama, and the manager's moved on. So it has to be a partnership. I still think it works. I mean, Sevilla, again, is a perfect example this season of Monchi picking his coach, the pair of them working together. The majority of their signings, and they made a lot of them in one go last summer, have been successful. So there are you know, examples of how this works really well. You get continuity. You know, the manager, the sporting director should always be responsible for picking the coach. And the coach knows that he works with the sporting director, not the chairman, not the chief executive. He has a relationship directly with his boss, which is the technical director. And between them, it's not hard between two, you know, grown up people to make it work if you're both looking for the same thing, which should be the success of that football club.
So the first thing that Valencia have done with Javi Gracia is sell Ferran Torres. In a way, they had no choice, though, because his contract was bought up by Manchester City. And so, in the circumstances, I know he's losing a good player, but that's sort of inevitable. The bigger choices are to come down the line. But just on Ferran Torres, is it a deal with which everybody should be happy?
Oh, Manchester City, I think, and Ferran Torres. And also Valencia to a degree. I think because they would clearly like to have got double the amount, because in my opinion, that's what he's worth as a young 20-year-old who's a super talent. But his contract only had a year left. That was his buyout clause. It was a failure from Valencia not to get him to sign a longer deal with a much larger buyout clause. So, you know, Manchester City swooped in. So they'll be pleased. Valencia to a degree. It's a shame he's a player that came through their youth system. But still, 25 million is still a lot of money in what is going to be a massive rebuilding process. So that's the first, you know, income that they have, the 25 million from him. There'll be other players sold. And then, of course, they then have to start to rebuild at the same time as not being in the Champions League or Europe next season.
Let's go on to Villarreal then, Terry, if we can. Kelvin wants to know, what do we think of the sacking of Javi Calleja and the bringing in of Unai Emery as the right coach to have them challenging for trophies, especially in Europe next season?
Well, I applaud the appointment of Unai Emery. I think he's a manager that's proven that he can win trophies. And it's about time Villarreal did do better in Europe. I mean, it's been too long now. I think they're a really good club, full of good players. They're a stable club as well. So this is why I'm surprised that they've done, you know, what they've done. Javier Calleja, we know, has been sacked once for 6 weeks and came back. I've not always been his biggest fan, but I think I've mentioned it. I've said in the podcast in the past that some managers get better. You know, they need to have 3, 4, 5 years. They might need 2 or 3 jobs before they suddenly, you know what they're doing. And this year, Calleja has been faultless, you know, to finish where they did in the league, to qualify for Europe, to play the Villarreal traditional style as well. It was a huge, massive surprise that there was, you know, talk on the last game of the season that he was going to be leaving. And it's just an extraordinary choice. But Villarreal have had the courage to make what they feel is a big call. It is a big call. So to make a change, it would have been easy to have left that. But perhaps their ambition is more than, you know, just finishing in Europe. They've never had a really good run in the Copa del Rey. They don't have enough success in European football. They're not going to win La Liga. But it is a real shame. I think I'm right. I don't think the club's ever won a trophy. So perhaps with Unai Emery, this is a sign of ambition that, you know, we want to do better. And we want to start winning trophies. So It'd be interesting. Good choice to replace Kayeka, but an extraordinary one to decide to make the change after, I think we all agree, a successful season.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you cast your mind back, I think the word is that they were talking to Unai Emery and coming up to some kind of agreement before the lockdown. And then after the lockdown, Villarreal were one of the success stories, weren't they? So it's an interesting one as to how much you build your decision-making on a few results. It's an interesting talk because I saw it linked with Crystal Palace, to link it back to England, where people would say the last game of the season was all important for Roy Hodgson. And I'm thinking, really? You know, it's a one game of football match can pivot on anything, can't it? You know, any team can lose against any team in one football match. And so you should be making long-term judgments about who's the best manager, shouldn't you? That is essentially what you're doing, isn't it? And so even if a guy has a good run, you're best to move him on. So, and I guess that's what they've done, isn't it? They've decided he was the best manager. They're probably important that they made a promise or a handshake or whatever to Unai Emery, and that's probably boxed them into appointing him. Kayeka will get another job though, won't he? Because he finished on such a high.
Oh, definitely, and yeah, that will happen soon. And as I said, he's shown improvement since he's been in charge at Vieira. But I kind of get the choice. Unai Emery has, you know, won the Europa League. He's now managed Arsenal. He's managed PSG. A successful period at Sevilla as well. So a hugely experienced manager. I know he's derided in the UK a little bit because of his accent and some of the things that happened at Arsenal when he was manager, but he got them to the Europa League final. So, you know, his pedigree is there, and it's a sign of ambition from Villarreal that they've gone for one of the more senior managers in Spain, one of the more senior managers in European football, in order for them to show their ambition. So it's going to be interesting to watch, that's for sure. And they've still got good players. I know they've lost Bruno Soriano, but we didn't see him for 3 years. And obviously, Santi Cazorla has to be replaced. But they've got good young players. They've got an excellent squad. They are a well-run club, so they'll have money to spend. And it'd be interesting to see how he fares next year at Villarreal.
Neil Parsons makes an interesting point. He says, talking about all the managerial changes, the speculation, never sees Valverde's name mentioned with anything. He should be, shouldn't he? He should be considered by everyone who wants a manager.
Exactly. I mean, he was successful before going to Barcelona and well-respected. And then he goes to Barcelona, does a really good job. It all went a little bit sour towards the end, of course, which happens with all managers that end up getting the sack. No, I'm surprised that his name hasn't been linked with not only clubs in Spain, but around Europe. So, yeah, I've no idea what's happening there. I don't know if it's anything to do with maybe he's still under contract from Barcelona. Sometimes that works. That's how it works with managers who get the sack. Contrary to public opinion, it doesn't. When you get the sack as a manager or a coach, you don't just walk out the door with a sack full of cash and a security van reversing back in to load your wages on. It can be a long, drawn-out affair. Compromise is often made, and in some cases, in a lot of cases, the clubs stall on making it any payment whatsoever, and you have to take legal action. So, you know, that's why we see some managers that don't work for a while, because they're caught up in these cases with clubs that they've been sacked from. Matter of principle.
It's dangerous that, though, isn't it? Because that effectively counted for, I mean, people won't even remember this now, Alan Kirbishley's career, who was a highly rated Premier League manager. And he got involved in a dispute about, you know, not being paid off. And his name drops off the agenda a little bit, doesn't it? On Valverde, though, here's my thought on Valverde. There is a level of coaches that the likes of Mancini were in, Ancelotti were in, where you are a manager who is trusted to win a league. And so, in a sense, you don't want to overplay, you don't want to grab something too quickly. You wouldn't want to, in Valverde's position, grab the Valencia job or Betis job or something. Bearing in mind that, so bearing in mind that when a club that expects to win the league is looking for a manager, so at some point Bayern will want a manager, at some point Man City will want a manager, that, you know, they will turn to a guy who's won the league in two different countries. And so, in a sense, you're protecting your position as a league-winning manager by not taking a grubby job with a lot of work to be done.
And the fact that the, you know, managing Athletic Bilbao is well paid, managing Barcelona is well paid, And you know, Valverde isn't sitting there, looking at his bank account, thinking, "I need to get back out working again to bring some cash in." So he can, he, you know, thankfully for him now, he has that, security that he will only take a job that he's got a chance of doing well in, that he wants to take, rather than being forced into taking one just to get back in work. So I think that's the reason. I think when a job does come along that suits him, then we will hear his name mentioned again.
Right, we've got a load of transfer questions. I wonder if we break those off and we do those after a break. So, shall we just have a little look at the Segunda playoff? There's lots of people asking about that. Rich, what do you think of the Segunda playoff situation? Lucas, when the Segunda playoffs finally take place, if ever, who do you fancy to make La Liga? And Pete says, can you give us the overview of the Segunda? Yes, I do expect you to be experts in both La Liga and Segunda. And what's the story with Deportivo? Nick says, what's next? Actually, it's too big a question, Nick. What's next for Mallorca, Racing Santander, and Deportivo? That's a whole podcast. Depor are down in an absolute mess. We have discussed them before, haven't we? But the situation at the top is just very, it's very unhappy, isn't it? Because and it's serious, isn't it? Because you know there are bigger things than football involved when people's health and lives are involved. So Fuenlabrada, I think it's 28 people were tested positive for COVID-19 in their group, and so they didn't play their last game of the season against Deportivo. They only needed a point, as it turned out, to get into the playoffs. I think the latest, Terry, is that the recommendation is that they don't play that game. So Fuenlabrada wouldn't get a crack at getting into the playoffs. But then there is the other allegation that they broke the protocol by travelling, because they're in Galicia, aren't they? They actually made the journey to play the game, and you're not supposed to. So there's probably allegation and counter-allegation and legal action potentially there as well. And so at the moment, it looks like the playoffs will go ahead without them, but it's not even certain then that everyone is going to be in a position to play the playoffs, is it? So it is a very unhappy situation.
Oh, it's dreadful. We came so close in both divisions to finishing off the season. I mean, we're talking the last game of the final day of the two top divisions in Spain. And Fuenlabrada, it's a great story as well to see them climb the divisions, to have a chance to get in the playoffs. Chico Flores was the player one of the players that's suffered from picking up the coronavirus. He was the one that was hospitalised for Fuenlabrada, the former Swansea central defender. And for them to miss out, it's not going to be clear cut, this one, because Elche have moved into the playoff position. I think some of the teams, Almeria, Zaragoza, Girona, Elche, as it stands at the moment, some of them have got players that have tested positive as well. So there's no sign that those four teams are going to be capable of playing against each other in the playoffs anytime soon. And Fuenlabrada, quite rightly, I think, are still stating their case that, they should have an opportunity to play that last game, then to get in the playoffs. But, of course, time's running out. I understand that. That's the big issue. Time's running out before next season starts. And, of course, La Liga need to know who's going to be the third representative to join Huesca champions and Cadiz in the La Liga next season. So I feel for all the teams involved, even Elche, who are grateful to be, sneaked into the final playoff position. And they're now in limbo. So it's a really difficult situation for everybody. And, those players that are fit and free from coronavirus are training. The ones that have tested positive are not training. And all the time we're talking about 6 weeks before La Liga starts again. So it's a really tough situation for everyone involved, even administrators in this case.
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary because you might not get promoted now. We're looking at August the 15th or something, aren't we, for this playoff to be resolved. And then you're starting again less than a month after that, potentially. So in order, Cadiz made a load of signings. As soon as they were promoted, they signed four or five players, including Alvaro Negredo. But whoever comes up via the playoffs or no playoff, if it's just Zaragoza because they finished third, I mean, it's an extraordinary turnaround, isn't it, to be ready for the new season?
Yeah, I'm wondering now whether the most obvious one would be to promote Zaragoza, who finished third.
Yeah.
And not have the playoffs this season, as tough as it is for Almeria, Girona, Elche, and possibly Fuenlabrada. If we go back to the tried and trusted method, Zaragoza finished third You know, they're
yeah.
above the other teams that are in the playoffs. So I would imagine that would be, even if when the Brada win their game in hand, they don't match the points tally of Zaragoza. So I think that would be the easiest way to do it. Let's just have the, you know, the old-fashioned way. Top three go up. You know, we understand that we were meant to have playoffs. The whole season has been built around playoffs. But with the situation that we're in, it's, you know, unique circumstances, difficult times. And I personally, I think that the team that finished in third position just promote them.
My reservation there, I mean, I would actually agree with you, rather than, you know, risking playing games when you've got guys testing positive. And obviously, you can't take any kind of gamble on making the whole outbreak worse. However, the money, that you know, the difference in finances that it makes being in the top division to not being in the top division, I do wonder whether you just compensate the other teams. And that you basically just say, right, have your TV share. And don't go up, you know. So whatever the difference in the TV payments that Zaragoza would get that the other three would get, you just give them that share, and say,
agree totally,
and then just you know there are bigger things than football, but at the same time, it is unfair that you know if Zaragoza go up not according to the rules of the competition, that you know that's got a knock on effect 4 years to come, hasn't it? So anyway, let's hopefully that's where we're at. Well, fingers crossed everyone is fit and they get the games played, but I don't know.
Depot going down is a huge story as well, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, go on then. Yeah, just
20 years since they've won the La Liga title, and now to be facing third tier football. I struggled to comprehend it, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, Racing Santander finished bottom, but they haven't got the history of Depor. You know, it's we've joked in this podcast about them still paying off the debt for winning that league title, and they were. That's unfortunate. That was the case. They overspent then. They've, you know, been a yo-yo team between the top two divisions, and they've really come unstuck with being relegated from the second tier to the third tier. I don't know. I have to be honest. I don't know what it means for the club, what it means for the players. That wonderful stadium that they have now that's going to be playing third tier football. It's an astonishing story, one that Depor shouldn't have allowed to happen, but unfortunately it is, and they're going to have to fight their way back now.
I don't have the inside story on how they've managed the club finances in recent years, but there is an element that we can't keep giving the people who run the club now a free pass on what happened. It was 20 years ago, wasn't it, that they won the league? And so that mad spending started, what, 25 years ago? Now, we call it mad spending. You were guys on, what, 20 grand a week or something, 30 grand a week, 40 grand a week, and it was mad spending in the 90s when that started. So compared to what the clubs are now bringing in terms of TV revenue, they could have sorted out, you know, there is an element, I think, I don't know, but I'm just speculating. Could they not have done a better job sorting out the mess, given that they dug the hole a long time ago? And I know it's a lot of debt, but was there no way of sorting that out?
Oh, there is. And, you know, I think new people are in charge. It's not the same people that were in charge all those years ago, but those people did stay on for a long, long time without really disclosing how much it had cost them, how big the debts were. But I think in terms of organising it properly enough, maybe not to survive in La Liga, but certainly they should have been able to maintain a position at the very least, in the top two divisions, which are the two professional leagues in Spain. So now to drop to the third tier, I don't know how that works. I have to be honest, whether it's part-time. I'd imagine Depor are still going to have the funds to retain, you know, professional players. But, you know, what players of quality are going to want to go to a historically big club that are playing in the third tier of football?
Yeah. And it's not like the English third tier in that, because in England, we've still got a national third tier, haven't we? In Spain, that's a regionalised third tier. So the standard is, you know, it's anywhere between League One and the National League in terms of, you know, the standard of the clubs, isn't it? So you've got some tiny little clubs playing at that level. And now Deportivo La Coruña, who less than 20 years ago were playing in the Champions League. So, you know, extraordinary. Right. Now let's take a little break and we'll come back and do some transfer questions. Welcome back. So we promised some transfer questions, and always, I think literally always when we ask questions, the most that we get are what's happening with Barcelona in the transfer window. Fionn will kick us off. Now he says, could this be the quietest transfer market for both Barcelona and Real Madrid? So we'll get back to that in a second, Fionn. Cal Ali says, do Barca need a squad overhaul? Do they have the coach to do it? Pete says, how have Barca got themselves in such a terrible mess over the last 3 years? I expect Xavi could have built a team around Arthur Melo, for instance. James says, what should Barca do to renovate their squad? What do they need? And Chagipta says, if you were the sporting director at Barca, would you consider not buying anyone this window and try to use the youngsters, Pedri, Trincao, although they have paid a lot of money for him, haven't they? Fati, Puig, Alenia, Toribio, part of a next generation. And Lars says, what does Barca do to challenge for La Liga? And Billy, given the pandemic situation, do you expect Real Madrid, Barcelona to spend anything this summer? So I get the gist of the question is, what do Barca do? Do they play it? Are they in a position where they can play it sensibly and cautiously? Or is the reality of their weakened squad, does that mean that they've got to go out and start spending some money?
No, I think they have to have a plan. And the plan, first and foremost, they need more players. Because we saw that clearly. And after the lockdown, the resumption of play, the squad, it was evident their squad didn't have as many players as Real Madrid.
Yeah. Yeah, literally, just shorter players.
Exactly. They? You know, even when they were filling the bench, there was five names on there that we weren't, you know, we hadn't seen play before. And most games, they had two goalkeepers on the bench to pad the numbers up. So they need, first and foremost, more players. Now, the obvious choice there would be to have more trust and faith in the younger group. Because, let's face it, Barcelona's young players should be a really high standard. They'll be at a higher standard than we've seen, you know, from other clubs in La Liga, from most other clubs in Europe. You don't get to be an 18-year-old youngster playing at Barcelona in their B team or whatever team you're playing in without being, you know, the pick of the bunch. So they would be the ideal players. Rather than going out and spending money on the likes of Paulinho and maybe Arturo Vidal comes into that category, you know, older players to pad the squad up, to be useful, which both of those players have been. But wouldn't it have been better to have had Alenia was mentioned. Carlos Alenia is going to be a difficult one because he's had an unfortunate spell at Betis where he went there and barely played. That was unfortunate for him because if he'd stayed at Barcelona when he moved there to Betis on loan in January, I think he moved days before Valverde got the sack. Probably his thought was based on, the manager doesn't fancy me. And, you know, he's not using me. I'll go and play for the rest of the season at Betis. If he'd have stayed at Barcelona, I'm pretty sure Setién would have had to have used him. So I think it's interesting. Puig and Fati clearly should be in amongst the first team. And then there needs to be more, another three or four that we can see, on, you know, on a quite a regular basis. Barcelona don't need their strongest 11 to beat quite a few teams in La Liga. You know, you could play two or three younger players in amongst the senior group when you were playing, say, for instance, this season, Leganés, Mallorca, you know, Alaves. You could have played, well, we saw them play against Alaves and won 5-0 with Fati and Puig being excellent. So I think there needs to be, instead of what we saw from Valverde as well, a reliance on about 15 players, senior players. And Valverde, one of the criticisms aimed at him was that we didn't see the introduction of younger players. Fati was only introduced this year at the start of the season because they had nobody else. If everybody had been fit at that stage, Suarez was out injured, Messi was out injured for the first month. So Fati had to play. There was no other choice. But I'm pretty sure if Messi and Suarez had been fit for the start of the season, along with Griezmann and Dembele, then we still might not have seen Ansu Fati. So I think that's where they need to bulk their squad up. Instead of going out and spending millions of euros on players to bulk up the squad, you know, senior players, you know, players that have travelled around, been to different clubs, trust that to the younger players. And then if they can, then they need to make sure that all positions are covered. They've got players that cover all the players. At the moment, we're still seeing this chopping and changing between Semedo, Sergio Roberto at right back. Sergio Roberto, I think, showed his form at the end of the season, playing in midfield. That's his best position. I think it's a weakness at right back defensively. He's great in terms of his skills when he's in possession of the ball in the right back position. But I think they need to make sure they have cover in more positions than what they have at the moment.
Right, here's some dramatic news. The carpet guy has arrived and started hammering stuff. Right, I will ask you questions and then I'll turn the mic down and then you won't hear the big noise at the side there. Hang on. So you won't hear me chipping in. This is lockdown life, isn't it? So we're, to be fair, we don't own expensive studios for us to go into anyway. So we've been doing it from home for a while. Right. Other questions. So Real Madrid question, which is I'll give James it because we've had other questions similar lines. How do Madrid stay competitive? Will Zidane's black magic be enough for consecutive league titles? He says, Terry, you've always mentioned how Zidane keeps things simple. What's the solution for this season? Because Florentino Perez says they're not spending big. So what do they do?
They don't need to. What they have is a load of players out on loan as well that could strengthen already a much significantly stronger squad than Barcelona. So they've got some decisions to make. And then in terms of who they bring back, will they bring Odegaard back? Oscar Rodriguez, we saw, was in fantastic form. Ashraf Hakimi has been sold. Does Odriozola come back? Take Kubo, does he come back? I think it's 17 young players out on loan that they've got to decide, or players out on loan they've got to decide what they do with them. And then I think that Zidane has those choices to make. Then they have to decide, do they sell them, cash in, which might be the case with one or two. Other than that, I think his squad is pretty stable. It's certainly brimming full of quality. There are one or two players that he would like to move on. Obvious ones, of course, James and Gareth Bale. And we're yet to see what happens with Luka Jovic. So it's Zidane's options are far better at the moment for Real Madrid than they are for Barcelona, who've got to do some work this summer because they weren't good enough this season. They do lack numbers. So I think from Real Madrid's point of view, have they, they're in pole position at the moment. Let's see what happens over the next couple of months in the transfer window. But in terms of the squad, Real Madrid are in great shape. Young players made an impact in the first team, the likes of Vinicius and Rodrigo in particular, Fede Valverde, all great additions to Real Madrid's squad. Ramos has got another year or two left in him for sure. Casemiro is still at a good age where he can play that position. Benzema has shown he's looked sharp enough at the age of 32 not to have to worry about the centre forward position next season. So I don't think there's any need for Real Madrid to go out and spend hundreds of millions of pounds on players that they don't particularly need at the moment.
I think they've sold Hakimi, haven't they? He's gone to Inter. Yeah. What would you do about Odegaard? Or does that depend on getting players out before you decide whether to bring him back and try and use him in the team?
If I was Real Madrid, I'd leave Odegaard where he is now, at Real Sociedad, because I think it's more important that he plays on a regular basis for a club at a good level, going to be playing in European football next season. And I think, still at the age of 21, there's plenty of time for him to come back. And either Real Madrid use him or sell him for big money. But I think if they sold, if they was to sell him now, it would be too hasty. I think keep an interest in him and also make sure that he still plays first team football, because I don't believe that if he goes back to Real Madrid, I don't see where at the moment he would get a regular game. And then the whole thing, that the momentum that's built up with his career, with his valuation, if you're Real Madrid, then falls apart. If he goes there and has a year there where he doesn't play, then it would be a loss for all parties. So I would think, I know Real Sociedad will be, desperate to make sure they keep him for next season.
Harold wants to know, he's got three here. One is, does Coutinho go back to Barcelona? Does Mariano stay at Real Madrid? And then what happens to Stuani? Obviously, Girona, they're in the playoffs, aren't they? He's got 29 goals, hasn't he, in the league this season, Stuani. I've seen him linked with Leeds. So, yeah, take your pick of those questions, Terry. What happens there?
With Stuani, I think Girona are fortunate that they are a part of the Manchester City organisation, so they were able to financially keep him in the second division, knowing full well that he had a good chance of scoring goals, which he's done incredibly well. I mean, he's done incredibly well since he's been in La Liga. He regularly hits over 20 goals a season. So I think that was, what was the other 2 points made?
Coutinho and Mariano.
Yep, no, Coutinho, I wouldn't be surprised to see him back playing for Barcelona. I think it's a different manager. So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back to Barcelona. They can't find a suitable club to take him on. And who knows, in the future, next season, we might be talking about a rejuvenated Coutinho under a different manager playing well again. Because there's no doubt, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, he's shown his quality over the years. Struggled at Barcelona, of course. But I think he's got the quality to come back into the Barcelona setup if they want to, if they're forced to, I should say, because they haven't got any other choice, then he could go on to still play well for Barcelona again. Mariano Diaz is, he should have left last season. I think it's a personal choice for him. I think there were opportunities for him to move on, but he felt that he could stay and fight for a place at Real Madrid and compete with Benzema. But that hasn't been the case. And personally, when Luka Jovic joined, he should have read, you know, the script and he should have moved on then. Again, that's another one. You know, a year ago, he would have been a lot more expensive than he's going to be now because he had this reputation he built at Lyon and scored lots of goals. It wasn't a huge surprise. Sevilla wanted him at the time, but Real Madrid paid the buyback. They got him back. They barely used him. His valuation has decreased. And as I understand, the player shows no desire to leave and go and play for someone else. So sometimes, you know, players like to be around a big club as opposed to playing every week for a smaller club. They like the prestige that comes with being, in this case, a Real Madrid player. He scored a goal in the Clásico. But I think for a player his age, he should be playing on a regular basis. But I think it's his choice that he wants to stay and be part of the huge, talented squad at Real Madrid.
Got a couple of questions about specific clubs. Let's do Hazarismo. Does Betis have a chance of qualifying for a European spot next year? I mean, Betis don't even know who their manager is for next season yet, do they?
No, we have to explain that joke in the intro that Pellegrini has taken over, of course, straightforward. And now he's contemplating, and the club are aware that he's received a big offer from China and he's contemplating whether to take it. Which is extraordinary. It would be a first, as far as I know in football, that a manager has taken over and without actually starting to work, leaves again. And they're talking about Jordi Cruyff being the replacement for Pellegrini after the replacement for Ruby, after the replacement for the interim manager. That'd be a shambles. Do I think Betis, as a club big enough to qualify for Europe, as a group of players, I think they're a million miles away from it. And I think that the form we saw, particularly, you know, the second half of the season, was dire. You know, for them to finish with 41 points, to finish behind, you know, the likes of Eibar, Valladolid, Levante, Osasuna, is a dreadful season. They need some guidance, need a strong manager. They have talent there, but they concede too many goals. And, you know, I frankly, I don't feel that either the two centre-forwards ever get enough service. But when you've got the likes of Carvalho and Joaquin still and Nabil Fekir still, Sergio Canales, all those talented players, they should be doing better than what they are. So I don't think they should be challenging for Europe next season unless we see a number of changes in their squad over the next couple of months. Then as a club, the size of the club, yeah, of course they should be challenging for Europe. And why not, you know, even challenging for the Champions League?
David Driscoll, no relation, says, how, I don't think so anyway, how should Celta Vigo approach this transfer window? What are your thoughts on Oscar?
Oscar is a source of frustration for me because we all agree that they've got the talent and that it was ridiculous that they flirted with relegation again. But what we see from them is they concede too many goals. That has been their problem. Over, I mean, it's not drastically bad this year. 37 scored, 49 conceded. But when I see Celta play, they lack that competitive edge to their game. Yeah, sure, they've got loads of talented players. But I don't see them, you know, fighting for their lives to get to a high position in the league. You know, it's all about technical qualities. Oscar Garcia, my frustration comes from him changing tactics too many times from game to game, three or four times during a match. The amount of times I'm looking at the Celta Vigo players and their change positions two, three, four times in a match. And it's almost like the five substitutions hindered him because it gave him more opportunity to mess things up. He lost patience with, 10 minutes a player, off you come, 10 minutes of a system, let's change it. I found it frustrating. Do they need to replace anyone in their squad? No. Do they need to add, loads of players to their squad? No. But they need stability. They need to be harder to beat. So they need to match that fight we saw from teams like Osasuna and Getafe. Then Celta will have a chance. But if they continue to be a nice team to play against with technical players, then unfortunately they're going to concede goals and they rely on Aspas to get the goals to keep them in the division. How close they came this year was ridiculous. It should have been a penalty to Leganés when it hits Jovic's arm because that's been the norm since lockdown. Anytime it strikes an arm of a defender in the penalty box, it's a penalty. And Leganés should have had the penalty. Leganés possibly could have scored that penalty and then Celta would be relegated. And that would have been an absolute, I was going to say disaster. It would have been a disaster for them. But with the players they had to have been relegated and Leganés to have survived, then it would have been an absolute joke. So the players need to work harder. They need to be more aggressive and show more determination, basically.
Okay, Granada. Billy says, aside from everywhere, what should Granada do to, how should they invest to make sure they don't get a repeat of Espanyol?
Well, they have to invest sensibly. They have to keep some of the players that they had on loan. Jesus Villeco is another Real Madrid player that's going to go back on loan. So I would imagine that would be quite straightforward if Granada got the money to buy Jesus Villeco to come in to replace, maybe Herman Sanchez, who's the older of the centre-backs. Can they keep the players that are going to be coveted? Rui Silva in goal, Domingos Duarte at centre-back, Carlos Neves at left-back. Carlos Fernandez was such an important player. He belongs to Sevilla. He's going to go back to them. I would imagine that Sevilla will be looking to keep him next season because the promise he's shown at Granada has been ridiculous. So when you look at his form and then Nesri and Luke de Jong at Sevilla, then it's obvious that they should bring him back in. I'm not saying for one moment, perhaps Nesri could end up on loan at Granada. I don't know, in some sort of swap. But it's Granada. It's going to be a big summer. They need more bodies. I think that's what comes in, and then they've got to get the right level of player to come in to so they don't weaken during their La Liga campaign and come unstuck like Espanyol. So I think it's just more players Granada needs, but it has to be at the right level.
Right. As the banging continues, I'm going to ask you a quick question then. Diego Carlos, Terry, no one's asked us about him, but all the big clubs around Europe are asking about him, aren't they? So, but that irritates you, doesn't it?
Just a bit. I mean, it's not just Diego Carlos. The reason we're talking about him, Sevilla paid $25 million for him last season. Now he's being linked with big clubs in the Premier League, the biggest clubs. We're talking Liverpool, we're talking Manchester United, and one or two others that possibly would have fancied him but think, oh, if they're in for him, we've got no chance. And now they're all willing to pay the buyout clause of $75 million. You could say, argue the same about Lucas Ocampos, another 20-odd million euro signing. You could say it about Jules Koundé, the same price, 20 million, now worth those three players. Look at the valuation, the benefit of having a sporting director who gets off his backside and gets away from the computer screen and studies football and watches games of football. My argument, my irritation is we have all this analytical stuff and players working at clubs, people working at football clubs in recruitment. They have huge staff to cope with this. Why do Premier League clubs, why are they not buying them for $25 million from France, those three players, last season? And now they're prepared to pay three times the amount. When I saw Diego Carlos, it took me three games, possibly less, to work out what a good signing this is. Koundé grew as the season went on. Ocampos was sensational all season. So why do we, Premier League clubs have this It happens more often than you'd think, where they don't make that 25 million euro signing. They wait until he has another year at Sevilla, and then it's like this player has suddenly appeared at the age of 27, and we've got the money to pay 70 of. So I think it's extraordinary. It goes to show the good work done by Sevilla and Monchi and other clubs in Spain who have got similar players that have, you know, increased their valuation. That's so important for clubs as well. You know, you're buying players, you get them on the books, and then their valuation triples in the space of a season. Can they keep him? 70 million is doable, isn't it, for the big clubs in the Premier League? But my argument is, why do clubs in the Premier League not, you know, make the most of all those resources that they've got? To find players like Diego Carlos, Ocampos and Koundé a year earlier and buy them for the 25 million that Sevilla paid for each of those three.
Shane says, how did it go wrong for Espanyol given the amount of juvenile talent at their disposal?
They didn't play them enough. That would be my argument. You still saw Victor Sanchez and Didac Villa playing every game. It's hard to explain in detail how Espanyol went from seventh. I think they were fortunate. When you look back at the season, they finished seventh. I think they had a spell during that season where they didn't win for 11 or 12 games, and they lost most of them. And Ruby was going to get the sack. Yet somehow, because of the failure of other teams in the division, they found themselves qualifying for Europe on the last game of the season. So they overachieved, and expectation levels were probably too high from that run where they found themselves in seventh position and qualified for Europe. But there is no way they should have disintegrated into what we've seen this season. And even after the lockdown, the play started again, their first couple of games were good. And I think they got a draw at Getafe in one of them. They won at home against Alaves, I think. And I thought, oh, they're going to finally, you know, pull their finger out and get themselves away from relegation. And then it didn't. It just, they failed miserably after that. Barely looked like scoring a goal. Didn't look like winning a game. And meekly finished bottom of the league. So to go from that seventh to that, it is hard. Sometimes, you know, it is hard to explain in football. Lack of confidence, lack of belief, lack of leadership, too many managers. It's not normally just one thing you can put your finger on. The extra games in the European competition, of which they actually did half decent in. And it was, you know, when they got knocked out by Wolves eventually, but it was Espanyol's B team. Because by that stage, they knew that their bigger issue was surviving in La Liga. So they played the B team against Wolves with some of those younger players in, and they gave Wolves, a really good team, they gave Wolves a couple of hard games with the younger players. So I think next season has to be one where all those young players that we saw come into the team and play on a regular basis. That's the future for Espanyol.
A couple more. This question we could have asked. I probably asked you this many other summers, Terry. What do Athletic do about a striker now that the King has retired? That's from Ryan.
Yep, no idea. They're going to have to magic one out of thin air or hope that they've got a suitable player that's going to come up from the B team. And it's hard. There's not one out there to go and buy. I'm not sure Fernando Llorente would be the obvious one again. But we have to be realistic. I mean, I think he's a fine player, but I think his best days are behind him. They can't rely on Raul Garcia. Iñaki Williams has to do better, so much better. I think we're getting to the stage now where my frustration is that he's becoming disappointed. You know, I think he got 5 or 6 goals this season. It's nowhere near enough. I know he isn't the same type of player as Eder is, but he has so many good attributes. But he has to get next season, and Iñaki Williams has to get 15 goals next season. That can't be Raul Garcia getting almost that amount again on his own. So Iñaki Williams has to step up, or they find someone like Villa Libre. But at the moment, unfortunately, he looks to be a better sub than he does a starter. So he's the type of player, he's only 22, he comes on and he's, you know, makes an impact in the last 10, 15 minutes. But he's shown that he's a good finisher. So hopefully there's more to come from him.
Okay, right. And I think we'll skip over, Mohamed asked a question, but I think we'll skip over this because he says, what are the best players of the season, defender, midfield, forward? I think it's probably worth a longer discussion, I think. So we'll come back and have a think about that one. Well, Brownie's question, a general one, why do clubs insist on buying expensive senior players? rather than promoting youth seems to be happening now more than ever. And then he goes on and says, thinking about it, it's more of an Everton thing than La Liga, but I'll leave it here anyway.
I'll tell you what the problem is there. We're to blame. Supporters are to blame.
Right, yeah.
As soon as the transfer window opens, supporters, you know, the majority of supporters want to see players brought into their clubs. And then people, you know, rave about them before they've ever seen them play because, you know, you can go on YouTube and get a clip of a player and, you know, of course, it only shows his better things that he does. And we get excited, we get carried away. It's, you know, if clubs don't make signings, I'm a Spurs fan. We went 18 months without buying a player. Spurs supporters were going mad. You know, during that time, younger players came into the squad and were doing well. But we're all to blame that we won. You know, money spent and we want players brought into the club and sometimes that is at the expense of the younger players. And then when a young player does get his opportunity and does play, everyone's banging on about he's one of our own. So we need to show that patience. Yes, we want exciting signings to come into the clubs you support, but we also want to see the young players, you know, coming through and making their way in the game.
Yes, so there we are. Right, I think we'll leave it there for now. So we'll be back. I'm going away on holiday, Terry, soon.
What?
Nowhere.
Come in.
I'm not going far. Don't worry. It's the fashionable venue of Cornwall is where I'm heading down to. Yep. So yeah, not far away.
But one of those pictures in the Daily Mail.
We'll behave ourselves. Although, well, I don't know. Am I supposed to go out and spend my £10 voucher, or am I supposed to stay at home? I'm confused about what I'm supposed to do. We'll do both. I'll stay at home and send the money to the pub instead. I'll be back because obviously the European football picks up soon. So we'll be back to discuss that. So basically, Real Madrid, Barcelona in action. So yes, obviously. Yes. Obviously, they're already through, aren't they? So we'll pick up with more podcasts throughout. What we hope from the Spanish point of view is quite a long European campaign still to come, but you never quite know, do you? And also, we never quite know what's going to happen with that, as you know, as the virus is still there and it still dictates what's happening around, doesn't it, to some extent. So enjoy the next week or so, everybody. Enjoy the start of the European football. We'll be back to do more podcasting as the Europa League and the Champions League unfolds.